Hello, and welcome to another episode of Point to Point. It's the show where I drive from one point to another and try to get to the point. Today's point. What is today's point? Yesterday, I spent some time going into the big city, if you will, to go hit up the MFA, which is the, for those who don't know, the M stands for museum, the F stands for fine, and the A stands for art. I went to the Museum of Fine Art in Boston. It was mostly don't tell their licensing group or their social media policy group. But I was there to do some on-location shooting for the Avowed video. It's kind of been a really fun part of working on that video, is just kind of playing around with a bunch of different things. Like I'm doing some on-location stuff in the museum, real on the sly, don't get your hopes up. But also, I did some recording outside the museum, which was fun. I have some like stop motion-y stuff going on in that video. It's a fun little experimentation thing for me right now that I'm really excited about. But the point today is not about the Avowed video. The point today is about going to the museum. I think if you were listening to the past episode about kind of the like enthusiasm in games coverage versus like covering the actual, you know, terrible things that are going on all the time. Something that I've been thinking about like on that trip to the museum and as I kind of like do more game stuff, there's a couple angles, right? So the first angle is like I love my big game Go Boom games. I'm like excited for tomorrow is Wednesday night game night, obviously, so that means that it's time to get back to Sons of the Forest, a game that we've been hammering at for a couple weeks now. I do like using the Fireman's Axe to hack at cannibals. That is an enjoyable experience to me. But I was also playing a game that I cannot talk about for another 12 hours. Suffice to say, it is a game that I described as it's PT, but it makes you sad instead of scared. Check out the website when that review hits. I'm gonna go home and actually write that review out because holy shit, what a good video game that was. But it kind of did that thing again where every once in a while you experience a game that's like, man, this is fucking art. Like they did it. They like made a truly exciting game that makes me feel a very specific way, and it is authored in a way that is supposed to like make you feel like a certain unease and a certain kind of like inhabit a person and their life. And like it was beautiful. I love that game. Like I said, check out the website. It'll be coming soon. Literally today. That embargo is up at, I think, 9 p.m. tonight. Hopefully I don't get that wrong. I got it wrong in the Discord yesterday. But it made me think a little bit more about, like, that game is about, it's about a particular memory disease that people have. I think I can at least say that game is about Alzheimer's, right? And it is a very small, quaint experience about what the Alzheimer's, you know, it's an interpretation of what it may feel like to be a person who is suffering from Alzheimer's. And it is a thing that is poetic, and it is sad, and it is just like a very difficult game in a way that, you know, a person who is suffering from Alzheimer's is, you know, having a difficult time, and like the choices that come from, you know, what do you bring up, what don't you bring up, and things like that. And it just kind of got me thinking because, you know, as I'm structuring this review in my mind of like what this game is going to be, or what the review about this game is going to be, the thing that I keep thinking about is going back to that discussion I had earlier about, you know, when we talk about Outer Worlds 2, do we need to like preamble with all of the bad shit about, you know, Xbox? And like the version of that for this article is, you know, do I need to preamble this review about a game interpreting an experience of living with Alzheimer's with like Alzheimer's sucks and this is what it is and like this is how it can affect people? And like, does that inclusion, how much of that inclusion, I guess, talking about the disease and talking about like the ramifications of that, and you know, even talking about some of the possible research that's out there that, you know, video games may help reduce your risk or impact of it. How much of that is necessary to put in the review? And I don't necessarily have a great answer to that. And it's something that even like walking through the MFA yesterday has like me thinking too. Like you'll read... Part of what I was doing there was taking some video of the pieces there to insert into my own video for Avowed. The Avowed video is about surrealism and kind of distortion of the traditional means of art and how surrealist artists have like changed, you know, how people interpret art and look at art, and then how, you know, Avowed through that lens is doing it. And the whole, like, the first point that I try to make in that video is that all art is fake, inherently. It is all, like, a manufactured representation of a thing that may or may not exist in real life. And part of that was going to the museum to, you know, look at the placards and see, like, oh, there is this very famous painting of George Washington. I think it's Washington on Dorchester Heights. And it is probably one of the ones that you think of when you think of a painting of George Washington. It's not the one where he's on a horse. It's the one where he's just standing there like a fancy lad. And the kind of interesting thing for the context of all of this is the placard explains that the painting was done several years after Washington was standing outside Boston in Dorchester Heights. And it was basically, they inserted the presidential Washington into this retelling of the battle outside of Boston. And it's this beautiful moment where you look at this painting and you're like, wow, this is like American history right here. And then the placard says, yeah, well, like, this isn't what he was wearing, this isn't what he looked like, and they, like, changed him to make it more idealized because he was the president. And, you know, we were looking back in hindsight, and, you know, he had won the war and therefore looks this way. And so there's this kind of artifice to all of this where, like, I don't know how much of that context is necessary to put into that piece. Like, does that change the piece? Probably not. It changes your interpretation of it and like kind of your takeaway, I assume. But kind of the same thing with the Alzheimer's game, where it's this beautiful thing of memory and like what you remember and how you come back to it, and how important is that for the context you live in. And the more I think about it, the more I think that, you know, the review of that game is going to be much more about the experience and kind of my broad enthusiasm that thing exists. It is a small game and it is incredibly effective at what it does, but I don't think I need to talk about the current state of Alzheimer's research, right? Like, do I need to make a review about a disease like that into a, you know, did you know that the Trump administration has reduced the amount of Alzheimer's research and perhaps set us back a decade in that research because of the removal of scientific grants earlier this year? Like, Do I need to say that? Is it important? Yes. Is it important for my criticism of this piece of beautiful art? Perhaps not. And, like, I wonder if by turning it into, like, a political thing in that kind of way, if I'm making the review about the politics of the thing and not about the actual art, which should stand on its own. It does. It is, like, a truly impactful piece of art. And I love that about that game. And maybe that's enough. Maybe it's enough to simply say that this is a wonderful piece of art. Thank you for checking out this review. Go play this game and draw your own conclusions from that. And kind of coming back to the original thought that I had yesterday, that, like, maybe the expose on Alzheimer's research is, like, that's a separate piece, because it's not necessarily impacting the actual content of the game. The game, you know, the game takes place in Denmark. Like, it's not talking about American Alzheimer's research or any of that stuff. It's simply inhabiting a character in a moment in time in their life, which is good. So yeah, I think I have like some interesting thoughts on how all of this stuff ends up working together. And it's, you know, it's an evolution, right? Like, we're constantly trying to evolve the criticism of this. And at this point, I think my main goal, especially for a review like this game, is to let people know that it exists. Because there's obviously, like, a huge gulf between the amount of good games out there and the people who are seeing them. It becomes, like, incredibly difficult to curate good stuff to, like, let people know. I just saw a perfect example. I just saw a post from Danny O'Dwyer from NoClip, and also NoClip 2, which is his, like, games media outlet with a couple of the other NoClip folks, talking about a game that he is saying is his favorite game of the year. And granted, there's probably a little bit of spin on this one, because it is about, it, like, takes place in Ireland, where he is from. But I completely trust his opinion. I think it's called The Seance at Bleak Manor. I downloaded the demo of it. If you want to tune into our Extra Life on November 8th, I will probably be playing that demo. But it is a game I never even heard of. It came out, I think, yesterday, actually, the 27th. It's $20 on Steam, The Seance at Bleak Manor. It has a very, like, so it's a first-person narrative mystery game. And if you look at the art style, it very much has shades of Blueprints. And it actually is maybe more of the game I thought Blueprints was than what Blueprints ended up being. But it looks sick. It looks like it has a bunch of, like, really cool, like, small minigame things in it. And I do love me a narrative mystery. So I'm definitely going to pick this up. I grabbed the demo for it. I have a very loose plan to finally work my way through a giant pile of demos during Extra Life. Maybe put a time constraint on it or something, because I have too many demos and I do need to get through some of them. There are just, like I said, there are just too many good fucking games out there, and too many of them that look crazy and look like they might just be my jam, or they could be extremely not. And I do constantly appreciate how much devs are putting out demos. So that'll be part of the Extra Life programming, I think. A little bit of a demo derby, or a demo disc, or a who knows, maybe we'll come up with a dumb feature name for it, I assume. But yeah, there's a bunch of, like, there's like a survival crafting demo zone that I have ready to go, this game, The Seance at Bleak Manor, a couple of other ones. But I think that is the place of reviews, I guess, to bring this all back, is that, like, it is our job to Like, I guess the real inspiration and kind of the, if we're going to, like, coalesce all of this into a singular point, the real inspiration that I felt yesterday while going to the Museum of Fine Art in Boston, Massachusetts, is that I think that one of the things when I think about curation and, like, curation in games and where I would like, you know, my coverage on the site to go is, I think it is very much in, like, being a museum, and not in a, like, retrospective kind of way. Like, the Video Game History Foundation is doing that. They're doing it way better than I could ever do it. Good on them. But I think the thing that I think about a lot is my favorite thing to do when I walk around an art museum is to find a new favorite thing. And it was actually interesting because there's a woman there who, there's, oh God, what's his name? I think it's like John Copley or something. I can't remember what his name is. He's an incredibly famous Boston area painter who painted all of the founding fathers. If you've seen a painting of Samuel Adams, it's probably Copley's work. But there's a woman who walked around and said, like, came up to a portrait of John Quincy Adams and said, "This is my favorite painting in this entire museum. Whenever I come here, I look at this painting and it's like true virtuosity. Like, the guy just, like, firing all cylinders, made the most cool painting of John Quincy Adams," or whatever. And on one hand, I love that. I love being able to go to a museum and have, like, a favorite that you get to visit constantly. But the thing that I actually, like, I want to push back on, because I don't have a favorite when I go to an art museum. Like, an art museum is a space for me to find a new favorite and, like, a new thing to go down, like a new path to figure out. Like, for instance, the whole point I went there is one or two pieces of surrealism in the Boston MFA. It's not really that kind of museum. Like, surrealism is typically reserved to the artist's actual museums. There's a really big Dali museum in Spain, of course. But there's not a ton of surrealism because it was, like, a small movement, and for the most part, it was kind of like, it would be like trying to go see a piece of Dadaism in a museum. It's not really, it's not the same as, like, giant walls of portraiture or, like, classicals or even, like, impressionist work. Like, there were entire rooms of impressionism at the MFA. There was probably definitely one, possibly two, maybe three pieces of surrealism there. So I went there to find those. But because it is slim pickings, there's not a ton of artists that are, you know, outside of the, like, Max Ernst, Salvador Dali, like, René Magritte. Like, there are, like, the big names, and then there's kind of everyone else. And if you don't study these things, which I don't know these people. So it was kind of nice to go there and say, like, ah, yes, this is a new piece of art that I like. Or there's an entire gallery in the MFA that is devoted to landscapes of Niagara Falls. And there's, like, a bunch of different artists who did it. There's like, actually a really cool, I think I might actually put this in the video because I think it's a really cool piece. But there was a section of three different pieces which were paintings of museum galleries, which is, like, there are paintings that have reproductions of paintings inside of the painting, which is just a really neat thing to do. But so I like going to these museums to find a new favorite. And I think that that's kind of the place that, like, a video game curation website can be. Like, that's kind of what I want. Like, I want someone to come to 70%complete.com and I want them to see all of the beautiful things on the wall, and to browse and to graze and see, like, you know, walk through the hallways and stop when something arrests you. And then read that article or watch that video or see what that thing is, because it might just be like this, you know, this Alzheimer's game I'm talking about, or this other game that I'm looking at that's about the Amsterdam housing crisis. Like, these games are not going to come across your timeline from major websites because there's simply not enough time for them to do that and then also cover the games that make them money. but I still paid $30 to walk into the Museum of Fine Arts not knowing that there was going to be anything in there that was going to jump out at me. I simply paid to walk in there to find something that is interesting to me. And I think that when the barrier to, you know, paying to walk in to see something that's interesting is typing in a web address, then I think, you know, you might have something on your hands. So that it's, you know, very pretentious and very inspired by recent events to say that I would like my website to be a museum gallery. But the more that I think about it, the more I think that that is where curation fits for us, because we're never going to be on the cutting edge. We're never going to have like the most up-to-date stuff. And as I think about coverage going into 2026, I'm going to probably shift away from doing a lot of, you know, trying to stay on top of all of the new releases, because I've done a terrible job of doing it already. But, that pressure is just not worth it, because it just means we're leaving behind the little games that have big things to say. So that's kind of how I'm thinking about it a little bit. It's a weird thing, but I guess ultimately what I would like to say to you is go to a museum, go look at the artwork of other people, like go take an afternoon on a Saturday or a Sunday, or if you can on a Wednesday, and, go see some artwork. Go see some good stuff that people put together. It has like given me a boost, and I think it's really nice to be surrounded by people who are observing things that you don't know anything about. It's pretty neat. But like I said, I will have that review of a game. I think I'll just say it, and if the embargo isn't for another 12 hours, I'll just hold this. But the game is called As Long As You're Here. It is a very heartwarming story about a woman who is suffering from Alzheimer's. It is very much not a game most people are going to see, but it is incredibly effective. I think you should play it. I think it is $10, comes out today, October 28th, and it's like an hour long, and it will make you feel feelings. And like I said, it is PT, but instead of making you scared, it makes you sad. But in a good way, I guess, if one can be sad in a good way when it comes to memory loss. Go check that out on the website. It'll be up later today. And yeah, thanks for hanging out with me on this drive and this weird rambling about making an art gallery. We'll see you next time. See ya.